Thank you, Jay, and Danny, and Nyssa, and Paige. Thank you so much for leading us this morning. I invite you to turn in your Bibles to the Gospel of John, chapter 6. We'll be reading verses 20 through 30, and as we do, we'll continue our reflection on Jesus' own I am statements. Today, as Danny indicated, we will be reflecting on Jesus' declaration, I am the bread of life. So hear these words from John chapter 6. So they asked Jesus, what miraculous sign will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our forefathers ate manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Jesus said to them, I tell you the truth, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Sir, they said, from now on, give us this bread. Then Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me and still do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all that he has given me, but raise them up in the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. Now, in the face of those very powerful words, I feel a little superficial making this confession to you that yesterday I experienced what they call a snaccident. If you don't know what a snaccident is, a snaccident is the experience when you might go to your pantry and there's an open bag of chips and you say, well, I'll just have a couple of chips, and then end up just sort of eating half the bag. Yesterday, we, after the prayer walk, experienced a special time of memory for Al Taylor here in our church, and then there was a meal for the family. And our bereavement committee did an amazing job sharing hospitality, sharing delicious food with that family so that they could remember together, so that they could connect. Many had traveled from far away. The ham was delicious. The slaw was delicious. And as usually happens at those experiences, there were leftovers. And so being the cowardly father I am, hiding behind my children, I said, I think the boys would love to have some extra ham and rolls tonight for dinner. So they packed me up, loaded me up with all sorts of food, leftovers, desserts, and the boys did enjoy that for supper. But still, there were leftovers after that, and it was about 9 o'clock or so, and I just started remembering how delicious the ham was. So I went back to the fridge to make sure it was still there. It was still there. It was still available, and I thought to myself, you know, I think I'll just have one more. There's a little space right here in my stomach that's asking for that piece of ham. So I grabbed a piece of ham. Then I grabbed another one. Then I grabbed another one. Then I grabbed another one. Thank you, Betty, for the ham. And then I remembered Pam Wheeler's slaw, and it was to die for. And not caring whether I lived or died, I decided it was time for me to enjoy some more of that slaw. So, because there was still a little space over here. So I filled it with the slaw. Thank you, Pam, for the slaw. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Ann Bassett's cake was still there, the coconut cake. That's so delicious. And so I had another piece of that. And so feeling kind of swollen at this point, I started to decide maybe it's time to stop here this time of night. But the snaccident had already taken place. What started as one piece of ham grew into what we call fourth meal. And it was delicious going down, but I know I didn't need it. I certainly didn't need it. But that's life, isn't it? How many times have you found yourself chasing after fullness like that? Believing that somewhere in chasing after fullness, you're going to find satisfaction. But we know there's a difference between being full and being satisfied. And in this world, we're constantly bombarded with a different message that tries to yoke those two, that tell us that being full and being satisfied are actually the same. And one of the temptations that we must continue to confront each and every day is the temptation to believe that in order to be satisfied, we have to be filled. Even when we know somewhere deep down in our minds or somewhere deep down in our souls that that is not true. That fullness does not guarantee satisfaction. And I'm not talking just about the food in our bellies now. I'm talking about all of it. Have you ever looked at your life? Have you ever looked at your own homes, your own businesses, your everything, and ask, where did all this stuff come from? When I first moved to Durham, I could move literally in the back of my Mazda Protege, small little four-cylinder car. Everything I owned, right there in the back seat in the trunk. That's all I had. And then when I moved back to Durham with my family to be a pastor at this church, not even 20 years later, it took an 18-wheeler packed front to back, just stuffing everything we could just to get it all here in one trip. Where did all that stuff come from? We acquire all the time, don't we? Sometimes we're driven by that fear of letting things go. Sometimes we're driven by a sentimentality that says, I'm not going to be able to hang on to what was meaningful to me before unless I can hold it, store it, and keep it. Somehow our anxiety sort of produces this intense urge to hoard, keep, control, fill, and believing that if we just have just a little more, that's when we will be satisfied. That's when we will finally be able to say the enough. But we kind of know that's not true either. Are there any parts of your life that are driven by that need for fullness, for filledness? You can look at it kind of from the opposite side. Ask yourself, what is it in my life that I really could not live without? Is there anything? Do you find yourself needing to eat until you feel really full? How does it feel when your device breaks down or when your internet gets shut down or the cable goes out of service? How does that feel in that moment? What would you do if you just had to get rid of half of your possessions right away? How would you even begin to decide? What are the things in your life that you just couldn't live without? That's a pressing question, but that is the question that's going to help us understand a bit better and learn about our own drive toward fullness. And it's relentless. And these are important questions for us because the answers are going to tell us in many ways about how our happiness and our satisfaction in our lives really is dependent and conditional. That it depends on externals. So we try and control all the externals. But today there's good news. At least there's news to start with. That we are not the first generation to feel this way. All the way back in Jesus' time, they were also confronted with these same questions and these same pressures. That drive toward fullness was part of Jesus' society also. And that's the backdrop of the declaration that he makes today. I am the bread of life. When he spoke these words to the crowd around the Sea of Galilee, it was just a day before that he had fed a multitude from the contents of a child's lunchbox, some loaves and some fish. And after feeding that multitude, Jesus retreats and the people chase after him. And so we read today the story of Jesus' words from the day after that. The people have been searching for Jesus. They find him in Capernaum. And you would think that Jesus would be encouraged, that a multitude's come to him, but you can hear a note of despair in his voice. Just before the section that we read today, in verse 26, Jesus says, "Very truly, I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill." They're driven to Jesus by that need for fullness. They're looking for another miracle, another shot of energy, another reinforcement of what Jesus has already shown them. Jesus tells them that he's going to give them something lasting, something complete. And in response, the crowd asked Jesus that question that opened our reading today. "What sign will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do?" Now think about the absurdity of that question in the context I just gave. We're barely 24 hours away from the feeding of a multitude, and they're asking, "What are you going to do for us now?" The more we chase after our fullness, the more what we have is not enough. There's that sense that we always need more. There's an old story. We don't know if it's true, but it's shared widely, that a reporter once asked J.D. Rockefeller how much money was enough. And his famous response was, "Just a little more." That crowd is trying to live miracle to miracle, from fullness to fullness. And that drive for fullness makes it really difficult to enjoy what you have. Really difficult to take in what's there. Our hunger and our appetites make us constant consumers rather than enjoyers. And so the crowd harkens back to Israel's own 40-year journey in the wilderness, when the people had traded out their slave rations for freedom. But in making that exchange, now in the desert, they find themselves hungry. And so God provides them a daily miracle. Every day they go out and they receive manna. There's bread from heaven that they can gather together. It doesn't require baking. It doesn't require special attention. It's delicious. And every morning they can go collect it. There are no long searches. It's right there for them. The only caveat is this: they can't store it. It goes bad by the next morning. And so it becomes a daily search for God's provision. If they chose to hoard it, it would spoil. They weren't able to stockpile any blessings for the next day. How could they live with the satisfaction of knowing God would take care of them except by this way, every day, one day at a time? And so now in Capernaum, the people remind Jesus of this story, that God did this for God's people then. What are you going to do for us? Maybe they wanted a miracle. Maybe they wanted another miracle that could take away not only today's worries, but tomorrow. If Jesus is really connected with the I Am from long ago, the one who revealed the fullness of God's own name to Moses, if that's who you are, if that's your connection, then take care of us. Not just today, but with that perpetual security that came from daily bread. Don't let us go to bed tonight worrying about tomorrow. On the prayer walk yesterday, one of the prompts I had walking in the neighborhood over here was, it was a pillow. And it was there in the parking lot. And I started to think to myself, how many people right here in this complex have lost sleep last night, worrying about the next day? How many of them have had sleepless hours late at night wondering about their own security? God, look after and speak into those needs. That was my prayer. But it must be a day at a time. It has to be. If we look at faith as something of a certificate of deposit, something that we do today that's going to have a payoff, an interest that keeps coming back to us long into the future, we lose sight of our daily connection and need for God's presence. That if we do enough today, we won't have to do any more tomorrow in service of our relationship with God. Have you ever prayed that way to God? God, if you'll just give me, fill in the blank, whatever it is for you, if you just give me that, then I'll be happy. And then you find out that the expiration date on happiness is actually pretty small. Happiness has this sort of planned obsolescence that goes away rather quickly, even when we get what we think we want. And whatever security and happiness that we attach to that desire, we find it's only temporary. And then those hungers, those needs come back. There's always another want. There's always another need. There's always another crisis. There's always something that keeps us from experiencing enduring satisfaction. There's always something that keeps us from satisfaction's lifelong companion, peace. It was C.S. Lewis who wrote that, "I sometimes wonder whether all the pleasures aren't substitutes for joy." When Jesus says, "I am the bread of life," in a very real way, he's telling us, I don't want you to spend your life chasing after fullness. I want to offer you satisfaction, no matter what your circumstances are. I want to offer you satisfaction in such a way that you can experience real contentment and peace. I can provide that. Let me be your source of joy. And so locating ourselves in that kind of satisfaction, the satisfaction that Jesus offers, is not something that just sort of manifests without our receptivity, without our engagement. It's known as we follow Jesus, and in living the way of Jesus, being conformed more and more to his likeness, his mind, his heart, his way. And so there are many ways that we can reach out and connect with Jesus in that way. I'm just going to name three today that I think are really important. And the first one is the least popular, at least among Baptists. And it is this: fasting. The deeply biblical practice of fasting. Fasting is actually foregoing consumption. Consumption of something in our lives. And in foregoing that consumption, it leaves an open space, sometimes even a hunger in our lives. Normally, when we talk about fasting, we associate it with food, but it can be a lot of different things. It can be skipping a meal or skipping a day's eating, but it can also include breaking from a particular routine or a particular pattern for some time period. It can mean setting down a specific food or something in general that you've come to depend on overly much, something like coffee or alcohol or sugar, bread, desserts. It can also mean setting down your technology. It can also mean turning off your computers. It can mean putting your cell phone aside certain hours of the day. Not the sleeping hours, the waking hours. It can also include fasting from unnecessary spending. It can mean a lot of things. If you want to know what your most beneficial fast would be, at least in your life, ask yourself what would be hardest to go without, and then go there. Set that down. When you fast from something that's central to your life, that becomes an important opportunity to focus on Christ as the source of your satisfaction. And as you feel and experience the discomfort of setting down something that you enjoy, it's meant to be a regular way of recalling not only Christ's suffering on our behalf, but it also makes room for other things. If you skip a meal, there's extra space in your life to pray or to be engaged in the life of others. If you set down your technology and your devices, if you turn things off for a minute, you have time, real time, to engage family or friends. If you fast from the level of spending that you're accustomed to, all of a sudden there is more in your life that you can share and that you can give. Fasting is a way to deny yourself, and deny yourself in such a way that your appetites don't consume you. You learn to say no so that your spirit has authority over your body rather than the other way around. And this is an important part of learning the Christian life. Another thing that you can do is to grow toward satisfaction by learning to accept what God gives you every single day. Accept what's available to you. More choices do not lead to greater satisfaction. I don't know how many people here, I see on social media, some people love shopping at Aldi. If you've ever been there, you're sort of underwhelmed by the experience at Aldi, aren't you? It's stripped down, it's barren, you have to bag your own groceries, you have to rent your cart. Everything is very, very lean. But in shopping at Aldi, you're actually tapping back into a historical moment when two brothers, the Albrecht brothers, who were World War II veterans in the German army after the Second World War, started a little store in Essen, Germany. And at that time, there were only about 250 items that could be rationed out to the populace. And so their store was basically the rations that were available. And as the German economy rebounded in the 60s and the 70s, of course, along with that and the growing affluence of the middle class, there came these full-service grocery stores. But the Albrecht brothers just sort of stuck with their model over time. And when it was finally introduced in the U.S., no one was sure it would be successful. But the Wall Street Journal noted it this way in 2017. Dim lighting bounces off brownish tiled floors. The shelves are sparsely filled with cardboard boxes. Checkout lines stretch to oblivion. Yet there is nothing super about these stores, yet their owner, German discounter Aldi, is betting billions it could win over spoiled American shoppers. How? By offering them fewer choices. Way fewer than rival retailers. Sometimes we believe that having all of the choices before us is going to give us better chance for happiness and satisfaction. I pray like that sometimes. Maybe you do too. Where you begin the day with that list of everything you want. God, I need answers to all these problems. I need resources for all of these challenges. I need you to step in to all of these conflicts. I need you to change this person. I need you to resolve this crisis. I need. The endless list. But real satisfaction is going to come in a very different way. When you learn to pray, instead of with your list of wants and choices, instead, God, thank you for what's before me today. God, help me to recognize and enjoy the very special blessings that have come in the ways that you offer them to me. Today, I will choose to be thankful for what it is you have given me. And as you begin to pray that way, satisfaction becomes more important than being full. Being full and getting full is something that we can control. We can do things and choose things in our life that are going to fill it up. But satisfaction is something that we need help with. And when we pray, when we ask assistance from God, we might actually be able to say, I have the gifts. I have the opportunity to be satisfied right now. today I have been given what I need to experience joy. It's moving from expecting to accepting. Do you remember what it was like to wake up on Christmas morning, not knowing what you might find when you made your way together? I was really touched in talking to Al Taylor's family. Al, 95 years old, he was the sixth of six children, son of a Baptist minister. And growing up in the Depression, on a Baptist minister's salary, he would sometimes very fondly remember Christmas Day when what he received was a cup of chocolate milk. There was one Christmas and he remembered receiving kind of a dried, wrinkly orange. It was a great Christmas, he would remember. It doesn't always take what you expect to make the undiscovered or the unexpected discovery of something given just for you. That's the surprise I'm talking about. What if you woke up with that sort of anticipation? Looking even at the routine parts of your day, the things that bore you, the things that you usually use to define the whole course of the day. I mean, if you set low expectations, your day is going to meet it. But if you go with a sense of expectancy, that good gifts wait for you, even in places you can't predict, at school or at work, in your family, even in the difficulties, what if those are the manna that God is giving to you? What if those are the opportunities that might be enjoyed in this day? Would it build your trust that God will continue to satisfy your needs daily? Fasting, moving from expectation to acceptance. And then lastly, in order to align ourselves with the satisfaction that Jesus offers as the bread of life, it is to seek to feed rather than being fed. Seek to feed rather than being fed. This is an important step for us. In the pandemic, our family has made a lot of discoveries about ourselves. One of the things is that we have a hard time finding a TV program we can all agree on. But one that we enjoy watching together is called Chopped on the Food Network. Perhaps you've seen it, perhaps not. It's a reality competition show where different chefs from different locations around the country are brought together. And there they, with exotic and sometimes bizarre ingredients, are challenged under time pressure to create gourmet dishes. And that show's been a lot of fun. A couple of weeks ago, we actually watched an episode of Chopped that had tremendous meaning for me. It's season 8, episode 3, by the way. Sweet second chance, if you're interested in pursuing it later. In this particular competition, there were featured two different chefs. One is a man named Lance Nitihara, and he is a camp chef at a Christian retreat in the Adirondacks. And another woman named Yoann Maigri, and she was originally born in France. She had moved to the U.S. She was just getting by, had a little cafe of her own. Her grandmother, she discloses, is very, very sick, probably sick unto death. And she wanted to use the prize money, the $10,000. She wanted to win so that she could purchase a plane ticket to see her grandmother again before she dies. Over the course of the show, Lance talks about his life as a Christian. And at one point, he says, "God, before God, I was a jerk." He said, "I was okay with stepping over people if I wanted, but now I'm able to do things with grace." Well, it's down to Yoann and Lance in the last round, and Lance edges Yoann out. She gets chopped. Lance gets the accolades. He's the winner. And as Yoann begins to make that long walk off of the center stage, Lance calls out to her. He says, "Wait. I didn't expect to win, so I wasn't expecting any money from this. You deserve to win as much as I did, and you deserve to see your grandmother, so I want you to buy the ticket with the money." And there's a long silence, which is anathema in broadcasting. The judges are stunned. The host is stunned. Yoan breaks into tears. In another part of the interview, Lance says this: "What I've discovered from my faith is that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And today, the journey was great." Seek to feed others rather than being fed. What difference would it make? Go home this week and ask God in your prayers, am I chasing after fullness? Or am I seeking satisfaction? You're going to discover a value in that journey that you make with Christ that is Christ's sustenance. And when you make Jesus your bread of life, you can let go of all the need, that need to get everything that you can for yourself. And you can begin to have a life that is free. Free to give, free to share, free to enjoy. The true good news is this: when Jesus is the bread of life, we can say to God, Lord, you've already given me what I need for satisfaction. So I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to share it with others. Amen. As we continue now into our time of response, it is an invitation to you to share as you're able the offerings that you bring to God through this church. And as Nyssa leads us in a time of reflection, to ask earnestly, where are those barriers in your life between you and a fuller trust in God through Jesus? Where have you covered up that need with acquisition, with consumption? Where have you chased fullness rather than satisfaction and the daily awareness of God's presence in your life through an ongoing relationship with Christ? If you've never taken that first step to follow him, to invite him into your life, today may be that day. Perhaps you need to return to a promise you made to him a long time ago. For all of us, it is an invitation to listen deeply and to respond.